The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the U.S. News and World Report, Associated Press News, Religion News Service, and The Economist. First of all, an article published by the Associated Press News on February 1, written by Nicole Winfield. Street artist of super pope fame gets new stamp of Vatican approval. Rome. Street artist Mal Paul, whose cartoon-like depictions of Pope Francis as a super pope have graced buildings around the Vatican for a decade, got an official stamp of approval on Thursday when he appeared at a Vatican news conference. Mapal, in life Mauro Pallotta, designed a series of posters to illustrate Francis's 2024 Lenten message, which this year emphasizes the need for the faithful to let go of hopelessness and bondage to find a path of inner freedom. The posters will be released weekly over the course of this Lenten season leading up to Easter. Sitting next to one of Francis's closest advisors, Cardinal Michael Czerny, Malpaul said he never sought out official recognition from the Vatican, but was proud and honored to have been asked to depict Francis' message in art. Representing Christian values via art has always been one of the greatest goals of painting and sculpture, Malpaul told reporters. I've tried to synthesize the profound concepts expressed by the Holy Father through pictorial language in a simple, easily readable style. In the first poster released on Thursday, Francis is shown walking through a desert field of upturned nails, hauling a wheelbarrow with a heavy sack and the word faith written on the sack. Through the desert, God leads us to freedom, reads the text, taken from the title of the Pope's message. Malpaul gained broad attention a year after Francis was elected in 2013 with the first graffiti art of the Pope as a flying white-caped superpope, a spinoff on Hollywood Superman, clutching his black satchel with the word values on it. The graffiti appeared on buildings of the Borgo Pio neighborhood near the Vatican. Initially, Rome's decorum police snubbed the images away, but they continued to reappear, each more embracing of Francis's message than the last. In one, Francis is shown on a ladder playing a game of tic-tac-toe, using peace signs for the zeros, as a Swiss guard peers around the corner to keep watch. In another, Francis is shown dangling from a harness like a window washer, trying to clean the sky of pollution. Over time, Malpaul became somewhat part of the establishment as far as the Vatican was concerned. In 2022, Francis met with him, and that same year, Malpaul started collaborating with the Vatican newspaper, L'Osservatore Romano. On Thursday, in addition to his place on the podium, the Vatican released a short biographic note about his art and his work in schools and prisons. Asked about his evolution, Malpaul said he never considered himself a rebel artist or the type of graffiti artist who remains anonymous because his artwork is, legally speaking, defacing a public space. Each mural is signed, Malpaul, but the artist has never hidden his identity. If I do something on the street, I recognize that it's an invasion because the street belongs to everyone, he said. So convinced of this from my very first one work, everyone knew my first name and my last name. Without seeking out officialness, I followed my path, and now I find myself here, he said. Our next article is from the Associated Press, published on February 1 and written by Adrian Sains. A Tennessee teen has pleaded guilty in the slaying of a prominent United Methodist church leader. Memphis, Tennessee. A 16-year-old boy pleaded guilty Thursday to charges of second-degree murder and carjacking in the death of a prominent United Methodist Church leader in Tennessee. After he entered the plea in a Memphis court, Miguel Andrade was sentenced to prison terms of 20 years for the second-degree murder charge and another 8 years for the carjacking, the Shelby County District Attorney's Office said. Both sentences are without the possibility of parole. Andrade was 15 when he and Eduard Rodriguez Tabora were indicted in February 2023 on charges of first-degree murder and especially aggravated robbery in the July 18, 2022 death of the Reverend Artur Eason Williams. Andrade pleaded guilty to lesser charges as part of the plea agreement. Rodriguez Tabora, 22, remains charged under the indictment. He has pleaded not guilty. Eason Williams was found in the driveway of her home with gunshot wounds. She died at a hospital. Video footage showed that the pastor was ordered out of her car and then shot before her car was taken, police said. The daytime shooting shook United Methodist Church members in Memphis and elsewhere. Eason Williams was superintendent of the Metro District of the Tennessee Western Kentucky Conference of the Church. She also was the pastor of Capelville United Methodist Church and a graduate of Memphis Theological Seminary. Andrade has been transferred from juvenile court to adult court. In its request to have Andrade charged as an adult, the district attorney's office said it considered his age, prior criminal history, and actions during the alleged crime. Another teen who was charged with being involved in the carjacking has pleaded guilty in juvenile court. In a statement, the Office of District Attorney Steve Mulroy said it met with the pastor's family and there were split opinions within the family regarding the prospect of a trial. As a result, we determined that a suitable resolution was to meet in the middle with a sentence of 28 years, the statement said. Eason Williams led youth camps, retreats, and women's events, and she preached for local, district, and conference church events. She also served on several boards and on planning committees that created My Sister's Keeper, an outreach that addresses health disparities of African-American women, and the Congregational Health Network, a network of 600 churches that address health disparities and build relationships between hospitals, the faith community, and neighborhoods, according to a biography posted on Eason Williams' website. Now an article published by the AP News on February the 2nd and written by Siren Giles. Too pretty? Easter poster depicting a handsome, fresh-faced Jesus prompts criticism in Spain. Madrid. A poster in the southern Spanish city of Seville that depicts a young, handsome Jesus wearing only a loincloth has unleashed a storm on social media, with some calling it an affront to the figure of Christ, and others posting lewd remarks and memes poking fun at the image. The poster, by internationally recognized Seville artist Salustiano Garcia Cruz, shows a fresh-faced Jesus with a crown of thorns, no suffering face, and minuscule wounds on the hands and ribcage. It was commissioned and approved by the General Council of Brotherhoods, which organizes the renowned and immensely popular Holy Week processions ahead of Easter in Seville. As soon as it was unveiled last week, criticism of it went viral on social media, and a debate erupted over how a resurrected Christ should be depicted. Many called it a disgrace, inappropriate, too pretty, modernist, and out of line with Seville's Easter tradition. Spain is predominantly Catholic, and church traditions such as marriage, baptisms, and religious parades are immensely popular, both among believers and non-believers. A campaign on change.org to have the poster of Jesus withdrawn was signed by some 14,000 people from around the country. The artist, Garcia, defended the work and dismissed the poster's critics as old-fashioned. "There's nothing revolutionary in the painting," Garcia told Atlas News Agency. "There is contemporaneity, but all the elements that I've used are elements that have been used in the last 7 centuries in sacred art. I don't see at what point, at what element, people who don't like it," he said. In another interview published by El Mundo Daily, Garcia responded to criticism from conservative groups that the depiction of Jesus was effeminate or homoerotic. "A gay Christ because he looks sweet and is handsome? Come on, we are in the 21st century," Garcia said. The artist said he used his son, Horacio, as the model for the poster. "It caught us a little more by surprise because everything was done with respect," Horacio Garcia told Atlas. "A lot of controversy comes from the fact that the model is too good, the Christ too handsome, too attractive," he said. But it hasn't all been bad. Horacio Garcia said he also has received many compliments and good wishes from people. The General Council of Brotherhoods has so far ignored calls to replace the poster before Holy Week at the end of March. In past years, some posters for different Catholic celebrations were withdrawn following criticism. Seville Mayor José Luis Sanz labeled the controversy artificial. "I like the poster," he said, adding that not all Holy Week posters can be the same each year. "Some posters are riskier, some more classical, some are more daring." We now have an article from the Religion News Service published on February 2, written by Fiona Andre. Pro-migrant pastors on a bus plan to meet God's Army convoy at Texas border town. Members of the self-proclaimed God's Army are heading to a small town in Texas to denounce what they say are the Biden administration's lax policies at the U.S. southern border. Faith leaders who support immigration reform and migrant rights plan to meet them to engage in peaceful dialogue. The God's Army campaign, called Take Our Border Back and led by Christian nationalist figures, has called on supporters to form convoys at sites in Arizona, California, and Texas on February 3, and to kick off their journey to the border with prayer rallies. "This is a peaceful assembly of Americans from all political classes and ethnicities who will be praying for an end to the immigration crisis," said the organizers in a January 29 press statement. Take Our Border Back's website points out the dangers posed by wide-open southern borders and invites retired law enforcement and military veterans, mama bears, elected officials, business owners, ranchers, truckers, bikers, media, and law-abiding, freedom-loving Americans to join the movement. The campaign was launched January 12 by Kim Yater and Scotty Sachs, two figures known for their involvement in Christian nationalist and far-right spheres. Sachs is the host of Sovereign Radio, a syndicated show emanating from San Diego. Yater is a life coach and radio host, also in San Diego. In a YouTube video posted to her channel, Yater said she started the campaign after receiving a vision from God. "We are on the brink of losing our country. It is imperative that we take our border back, and that we take our border back right now," she said on One America News. The three convoys will head to Yuma, Arizona, Eagle Pass, Texas, and San Ysidro, California, and will share their progress south and east in real time on social media. The convoy headed to Texas departed from Virginia on January 29 and will end its trip at the Cornerstone Children's Ranch in Kamado, Texas, near Eagle Pass, after a stop at Dripping Springs, Texas. Doug Padgett, a Minnesota pastor who runs the anti-Christian nationalism organization Vote Common Good, hopes to meet the drivers and engage with them in Kamado. We're just going to be around and try to humanize the situation and not have it be primarily about the disagreement, he said. Padgett said he learned about the campaign last weekend and decided to head south on his organization's bus, decorated with blue banners that say, "Confronting Christian Nationalism for the Common Good," on one side, and "Faith, Hope, and Love, Supporting Democracy for All," on the other. Vote Common Good's bus, which started in Minnesota, has stopped in Michigan and Missouri, where it was joined by other faith leaders. Having arrived in Eagle Pass on Friday, they hope to meet for a prayer service at the Children's Ranch on Saturday with groups of locals who help migrants crossing the border. Padgett, whose organization has worked to counter the rise of extremist Christian nationalists since 2018, said God's army differs from old-school Christian nationalists, calling them a variance to the Christian nationalism disease that is particular to the time that we live in. He characterized their mission as a very fringe view. Padgett pointed to calls for violence from certain God's Army members. Some have called to hunt down migrants, and said he feared some protesters might come with the same belligerent spirit as the January 6 protesters who stormed the U.S. Capitol. By meeting with them on Saturday, Padgett also hopes to show them that the real danger is not for Americans, but for the migrants crossing the river. Lori Mercer, a resident of Kamado, has run the Cornerstone Children's Ranch since 1998. On Saturday, she will host hundreds of members of the Take Our Border Back campaign for a prayer breakfast. Together, they will be praying and trusting the Lord to do a miracle on the border, she said. The Cornerstone Children's Ranch is a Christian organization that serves ministers on both sides of the border who've been affected by migrants, she explained. The situation is we live on the border. Across the street is Mexico, and we have illegals coming through here. They're causing problems. It's horrible. It's just been gradually getting worse, Mercer told RNS. Texas Governor Greg Abbott also plans to join the convoy at Eagle Pass on Sunday. The Take Our Border Back movement is also supported by U.S. Representative Keith Self, a representative for Texas' 3rd District in Congress, who said he will attend the Texas gatherings. The campaign was also promoted on Tucker Carlson's podcast and the far-right conspiracy network InfoWars. We now have a book review that was published in The Economist on January 13, entitled The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory by Tim Alberta, published by Harper, 496 pages, $35. On July 4, 1976, more than 25,000 people gathered in a field in Lynchburg, Virginia, to mark, if not exactly celebrate, the bicentenary of the Declaration of Independence. The stage was decorated with jolly red, white, and blue bunting and a full-scale replica of the Liberty Bell. But the message coming from the podium was grim. Jerry Falwell, a popular television preacher and founder of the nearby Liberty University, had organized the event, and he spelled out where America had gone wrong. The nation was intended to be a Christian nation by our founding fathers, he proclaimed. This idea of religion and politics don't mix was invented by the devil to keep Christians from running their own country. This was an odd and oddly ahistorical message to deliver on the 200th anniversary of a nation founded in large part on the notion of religious liberty. Rather than embrace a pluralist vision of a prosperous democracy in which people of all faiths and no faith at all would be left to their own beliefs, Falwell urged his audience to rescue America from the liberal, secular elites that were dragging it into the pit. Falwell would soon rebrand his followers as the moral majority, a block of voters that could be marshaled to support conservative causes and elect Republican candidates. For Tim Alberta, the writer, a journalist at The Atlantic, the Lynchburg Bicentennial was a pivotal moment, as it forged an unholy alliance between evangelical believers and right-wing nationalists. Falwell, he argues, was one of the most consequential figures of the late 20th century, as his noxious blend of Christianity and conservatism would roil America's political landscape and radicalize its Protestant subculture. And roiled it still is. As Mr. Alberta powerfully chronicles in the pages of The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, Falwell and his allies have poisoned not only politics, but the very faith its self-appointed champions claim to be defending. Mr. Alberta, the son of an evangelical minister, describes himself as a believer. He exposes the rot at the heart of the modern evangelical movement, not as a secular critic, but as an insider. That gives him access, but more important, it gives him a sympathetic ear, allowing him to hear the anxieties driving people whose tactics he deplores, but whose spiritual, if not political, vision he often shares. Traveling the nation, attending sermons at megachurches and at tiny roadside chapels, Mr. Alberta describes a world divided against itself. Much of the book offers a rogue's gallery of power-hungry operators, religious fanatics, and old-fashioned snake oil salesmen. He speaks to well-known figures such as Ralph Reed, a lobbyist and the founder of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, who has made it his life's work to fuse Christianity with Republican politics. Mr. Alberta also includes the perspectives of lesser-known characters such as Greg Locke, a pastor at the Global Vision Bible Church in Tennessee, who once called President Biden a sex-trafficking, demon-possessed mongrel. Along the way, Mr. Alberta also encounters plenty of men and women trying to live by traditional Christian values. Donald Trump casts a shadow over much of the book. In 2020, 85% of white evangelicals who regularly went to religious services voted for him. Mr. Alberta is no fan of the former president, whom he calls a lecherous, impenitent scoundrel. Though politicians on the right have long exploited the evangelical movement for their own gain, the author is appalled by the role evangelicals played in Mr. Trump's political rise. For Mr. Alberta, the source of the problem is simple. Too many have perverted the meaning of the Gospels and sold their souls for power and influence. It is hard to square Christ's dictum, "My kingdom is not of this world," with the right-wing Christian nationalism spouted by Falwell and his successors. Mr. Alberta is aware of the dangers to American democracy posed by the confounding of religion and politics, but he is even more concerned about its impact on the church itself. Evangelicals, according to a recent poll by the Pew Research Center, are now among the least popular groups in America, with many former adherents identifying as ex-evangelical. Still, Mr. Alberta isn't without hope, since the Bible says that faith thrives in adversity. After attending one particularly uplifting sermon, he finds himself on his knees in prayer, overcome with a sense of assurance. Our last article was published by the U.S. News and World Report on February 4 and is entitled "Man Extradited from Sweden to Face Obstruction Charges and Arson Case Targeting Jewish Organizations." Boston. The brother of a man suspected in four arsons involving Jewish institutions in the Boston area in 2019, has been extradited from Sweden to face charges alleging that he obstructed the investigation, federal prosecutors said Sunday. Alexander Giannakakis, 37, formerly of Quincy, worked in security at the U.S. Embassy in Stockholm, Sweden, when he was arrested by Swedish authorities in 2022. He has been awaiting extradition proceedings, according to a statement from the U.S. Attorney General's office in Boston. Giannakakis arrived in Boston Friday and is scheduled to appear in federal court Monday afternoon, the U.S. Attorney's office said. He has not yet named or been appointed an attorney, according to online case records. An online database search for people with the last name Giannakakis in Massachusetts turned up a listing for an Alexander, but no phone number was available. Alexander Giannakakis' brother was hospitalized in a coma at the time he was identified as a suspect in February 2020, and he died that year. Federal authorities did not name him. Alexander Giannakakis was indicted by a federal grand jury in Boston in 2019 on charges of making false statements in a matter involving domestic terrorism, falsifying, concealing, and covering up a material fact in a matter involving domestic terrorism, concealing records in a federal investigation, tampering with documents and objects, and tampering with an official proceeding. In connection with his arrest in Sweden, Giannakakis was convicted of unlawfully possessing a firearm and other weapons. He served a sentence in Swedish prison, which ended in December. The Swedish government granted the U.S. extradition request on December 21, the U.S. Attorney's Office said. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen again next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.